I got a question for you. How much would you pay to see your team win a championship in person? Could be a college team, could be a pro team, could be a best of seven series, could be a national championship game. How much would you pay? With Tennessee beginning the NCAAs and regional play, the ticket prices are through the roof. We're going to discuss that and a whole lot more today on a Thursday, Locked On Vols.
You are Locked On Vols, your daily podcast on the Tennessee Volunteers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Good Thursday, everybody, and welcome into it. This is Locked On Vols, your go-to University of Tennessee athletics podcast, 5 days a week, weekday mornings when you wake up on YouTube and wherever you find your podcast, whether that be the Odyssey app, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, anywhere you can find it, it's there and on YouTube. Go ahead and please rate, review, subscribe, give me 5 stars, give me some of those good reviews. It's all about the algorithm, and I can't thank you guys enough for that. All right, so we got a fun show coming up today. Again, if you're new to the show, welcome to it. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. I'm Eric Kane. You can find this podcast at underscore Kaner and at Locked On Vols. Got a fun show today. So here in just a moment, we're going to give you the latest from day one of the spring meetings. That came, I guess it was on, you know, really Tuesday and Wednesday as players or as coaches and administrators and chancellors and presidents and everybody are kind of, you know, us, you know, all meeting at the sands of Sandestin Beach down there. So we're going to talk a little bit of that, plus scheduling format and all that. Segment two, how much are you going to pay to see your team win a championship? It's a very relevant conversation right now. Well, because the University of Tennessee is beginning its postseason run. And then in segment three, some more looking into the future in terms of this football season. Mel Kiper put out his first big board for the 2023 NFL draft prospects, plus quarterback ranking, another one heading into the new 2020 season. Where does Hendon Hooker rank on that and some other Tennessee players? We'll get into all that. That's coming up here on today's show. So let's go ahead and dive down into it. Before we get into it, I do have one Twitter Tuesday question that I skipped over yesterday, and I do apologize. This is from Sawyer Turnbow. He wants to know why Tennessee was the visiting team against Kentucky and Florida. Seems like the number one seed should always be the home team. Yes, it should always 100% be the home team. Makes no sense to me. That is an NCAA rule. The way it's phrased is because Tennessee was the away team less than Florida and less than Kentucky in the semifinal round. That's why it was the way team in those games. Made no sense to me. I think if you are the number one seed overall, you earn that right and you should be the home team. But regardless, it didn't really matter. Tennessee, you know, took care of business. So sorry for skipping on that one yesterday, and wanted to go ahead and get it answered right now. But back down to Sandestin, to Destin, Florida, SEC spring meetings. Of course, the big news coming out of the first day rather was, you know, the discussion format for the future scheduling. It is indeed down to two formats. They discussed a number of different ways they can do it. Of course, this is in 2025 when Oklahoma and Texas come and join the SEC. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. We've talked about the two formats they're going to be voting on and trying to discuss. And, you know, if not coming to a conclusion this go around, at least paving the way to come to a conclusion in the very near future. You got the 1-7 format or the 3-6 format, which would be no divisions. All the talk is coming out that it's pretty much universally agreed on that there's going to be no divisions moving forward. Once Texas and Oklahoma join the SEC, it's going to be 16 teams, and they're going to follow the format of 1-7, which would be 8 conference games, or 3-6, which would be, of course, 9 conference games. A lot of the higher revenue generating teams in the SEC are the ones, of course, that win a lot of games. The Alabamas, the LSUs, the Georgias, the Floridas, the Auburns, those types of schools, where the lesser generated teams and programs from the SEC, the South Carolinas, the Missouris, the Vanderbilts, the Mississippi States, Tennessee and Arkansas actually fall into that one as well. They kind of tend and want to keep it to an 8-game regular season schedule. Why is that, or conference schedule? Well, it's because when you're competing for bowl eligibility, which Tennessee's had to do that, you know, in recent memory, but typically it's not an every year thing, but it is for some of these schools. When you're trying to compete for bowl eligibility to win 6 games, you pretty much have 3 guaranteed wins in the non-conference slate, and sometimes even 4 whenever if you schedule a weaker Power 5 opponent, right? if you add a ninth conference game onto the schedule, that just means it's going to be that much tougher to get to bowl eligibility into six games. So that's one of the big reasons why some of the lesser revenue-generating teams want to keep it the way it is, whereas, you know, the Alabamas of the world, the LSUs and the Georgias and all them want to go to nine games. And so we discussed Ross Dellinger's piece last week, or I guess it might have been 2 weeks ago, about kind of how that would be in terms of maybe, you know, reasons why they're coaxing the bottom tier of the SEC to come to the nine-game schedule. You know, if you do the 3-6 model, you would play one team from the top tier and two other teams from the bottom tier if you're from that bottom tier. If you're from the top tier, you play two other teams from the top tier and one team from the bottom tier, stuff like that. I don't know if that's been discussed. I don't know where that stands, but they are discussing the 1-7 format or the 3-6. And I like you guys. I think the majority of you guys listening right now are saying, you know, more SEC, more SEC, more good football games. I'm 100% in favor of the 3-6 model. That's nine conference games. You get to preserve your two biggest rivals, two longest standing rivals as well, and Vanderbilt and, well, you know, debatable, I guess, because Kentucky's not in this group, but Vanderbilt and Alabama. And then potentially you could preserve the Kentucky game, or you could preserve the Georgia game, or the Florida game, or, you know, what other you know, game that I guess the SEC gives you. But if you went to the 3-6 model, pretty much it's pretty much guaranteed that the SEC is going to give you Vanderbilt and Alabama. If you went to the 1-7 model, then you're only guaranteed to keep one of those games, and they're not going to split Tennessee and Vanderbilt up because they've been playing for over 100 years. So no divisions, and they're deciphering, they're discussing the 1-7 or the 3-6. I'm in favor of the 3-6. And also, something I got into it with one of the guys on the morning show that I work with, Will West. I feel like, and I've said this before, and I don't know where you guys come down on this, but, I mean, if you're playing nine conference games in the SEC, why on earth would you schedule a USC or an Ohio State or you know, some big-time Power 5 out-of-conference game? Why on earth would you do that? You're just really prohibiting yourself to trying to make the college football playoff. Sure, resume builders when they go to 12 teams and all that, I got you. But for right now, if you adopt this 3-6 model and you add another SEC team to your slate every year, if they take away that Power 5 regulation for the non-conference game and you can just play three cupcakes. Call me soft all you want. I just think that's logical right now. And then, of course, you can move that in the future. But nonetheless, that's kind of where we stand right now. That's the biggest topic of conversation for sure. No pods. I think pods are off the table right now. And I think it makes more sense for, you know, the pods whenever you're at 16 teams right now, or you will be in 2025. Make the pods a thing when you get up to 20 teams, 24 teams. Treat it straight like NFL divisions. You have an SEC East, an SEC West, an SEC North, an SEC South, you know, stuff like that. I don't think you're there yet. And until you add more teams, I don't think there's a case to go to pods. The 3-6 model is not a pod system. Like, say Tennessee's three permanent opponents or common opponents would be Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky. Tennessee plays those three teams. Of course, Vanderbilt will play Tennessee, but it doesn't have to play Alabama or Kentucky. It might, but it doesn't have to. It can play Missouri and, you know, Auburn or whatever. Kentucky will play Tennessee, but it also could play Florida and Mississippi State. You know what I'm saying? They're not exclusive. If you're in a pod, that would be exclusive for sure. But nonetheless, the SEC spring meeting's ongoing for the first time since 2019, mind you, as well. And there's a... You know, there's a little bit of talk coming out of it and everything right now. This is from the Bammer Hammer, and it's an article written by Ronald Evans, and he's kind of taken an article that was written by Matt Hayes of Saturday Down South, saying he's spoken to one SEC athletic director and one other industry source. This is from Matt Hayes, a quote from the SEC athletic director on the spring meetings. Quote, "We've moved way past everything that's on the table point. There will be hard, real discussions this week down in Destin," end quote. The industry source provided this, per Matt Hayes, quote, "We're a lot closer than you think to monumental change, and I don't use that word very lightly," end quote. What's that mean? Could that mean an SEC-only playoff system? I give that about a 1% chance of happening. I really do. Greg Sankey was asked about this at the beginning of the week, and he said, no, it wasn't a threat. It was just saying that that's not off the table. We can discuss it and all that. I thought that was a threat. I thought that was a warning shot, much like Nick Saban coming out talking to NIL a couple weeks ago. And, of course, you had that whole saga unraveling as well. Nick Saban was, mind you, right now, let's hear from Nick Saban. We'll get back to this conversation. Let's hear from Nick Saban. You knew the question was going to be asked. A Texas A&M beat reporter went ahead and said, hey, what about those comments from Jimbo Fisher or about Jimbo Fisher? Give this a listen. Nick Saban earlier this week in Destin at the spring meetings, when asked about the comments he made about Texas A&M Jackson State and Jimbo Fisher.
You know, I didn't really say that anybody did anything wrong.
Well, you said they bought their recruiting class.
I didn't say anybody did anything wrong, okay? And I've said everything I'm going to say about this. But, you know, I think that, you know, I guess the point, and I should have never mentioned any individual institutions, and I said that before.
Saban's not wrong, right? He didn't say anybody was breaking any rules or doing anything wrong. He simply, you know, but when you say Texas A&M bought every player, that you're implying that they're cheating, but they're not cheating. Again, in the realm that name, image, and likeness is in right now, good luck proving inducement, right? You know, good luck proving that, because you won't. And so Saban's kind of coming out there saying, hey, I didn't say anybody was breaking any rules. I'm just saying I didn't like it. And so I understand where he's coming from. He's backing off, and he has backed off since those initial comments were spoken. But nonetheless, I wanted to get those to you there. So we'll see. SEC playoff only. You know, we talked about that last week on the pod. We'll see if they, you know, really even get to it this week. I'm sure that they'll talk about it, but I give that about a 1% chance of happening. But the biggest thing so far, and I'm going to wrap this segment up talking about SEC spring meetings, and I'm going to try to tomorrow give a little update on the spring meetings, everything that we've heard so far, what's the latest scoop coming out from down there. But one of my favorite things from day one and day two, if you will, was, oh man, it was the seating chart that was tweeted out, and Lane Kiffin quote tweeted it and was all pumped because he's sitting next to Mike Leach. So this is from Pat Smith. Pat Smith is, let's see here, he's co-host of the Three Man Front, co-creator of the Paul Feinbaum Show, and of course he's a part of the Jocks family over there. He tweets, the most anticipated tweet about SEC spring meetings, the football coaches' seating chart. Interesting that Jimbo is flanked by SEC officials. So if you're seeing, I don't know if I can put this up on the YouTube screen. I might have to do this in post-production, but if I can't figure it out, I'm sorry. But there's a tweet from Pat Smith, at Pat Smith Radio. It's a picture of a, you know, a hand-drawn table, essentially, and names are spanning across the table. You got one long side, like a conference table, one long side, another long side parallel to that, and of course, the two short sides. It's got names written, kind of like where they're going to sit. And on both flanks, the short sides and one long side, you have the 12 SEC coaches right now, okay? Starting from left to right on the long side, Eli Drinkwitz, Mike Leach, Lane Kiffin, Brian Kelly, Mark Stoops, Kirby Smart. Going to the short side, you've got Billy Napier, Brian Harsin, Sam Pittman, Nick Saban. Other short side, Shane Beamer, Josh Heupel, Clark Lee. And then you have Carlos Dunlap, who's part of the, you know, SEC contingent. And then on the other long side, completely, you know, parallel from where the coaches are, you've got left to right, Greg Sankey, David Cutcliffe, Jimbo Fisher, William King, Mark Womack, John McDade, and Herb Vincent. Those are all SEC officials, the commissioner, and Jimbo Fisher right in the middle. So I saw this, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they're putting Jimbo Fisher in timeout. This is, as Will West coined it on the starting lineup, 99.1 The Sports Animal. He said, hey, this is when you get in trouble and you got to move your, you know, in grade school and you got to move your desk up to the teacher, right? That's what Jimbo Fisher is. So that's what I'm choosing to believe, okay? Because Nick Saban, if you look at the layout, Jimbo Fisher is centered on one of the long sides of the table. Nick Saban is all the way to his right in the first chair on that side. So for Jimbo Fisher to meet Nick Saban's eye line, he would have to turn 90 degrees and look all the way to his right. It's not very comfortable, okay? And also, right across from the table from Jimbo Fisher, you got Lane Kiffin. Flanked to Lane Kiffin's right is Mike Leach. And Greg Sankey is right in eyesight with Lane Kiffin, too. So it's like Lane Kiffin's got some friends, but also Sankey's kind of eyeing him down, too. So I want to believe that Jimbo Fisher's in timeout. It was brought to my attention that each year there's a you know, SEC coaches chairman, and they sit right next to the commissioner and the commissioner's special assistant, which is David Cutcliffe. And apparently that's Jimbo Fisher this year. So that sounds logical. That sounds like it's very valid. I'm going to choose not to believe it, and I'm going to say Jimbo Fisher's in timeout. So I'm not going to spend a whole segment talking about the seating arrangement, but I thought that was too good not to pass up, and I'll retweet this tweet so you guys can see it. If not, if you're watching on YouTube, I'll try to flash it up here at some point if I can figure it out, but, you know, we'll see. But nonetheless, those are the highlights there from the SEC spring meetings, day one, and really kind of two. As we venture on throughout the week, I'll continue to give you some more updates on tomorrow's show as well. Hey, where does... Actually, that's coming up in three. Segment two, how much money are you going to pay to watch your team win a championship? A really hot topic right now because obviously Tennessee's in the postseason, and we're going to hit that on the other side. But our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one source for all your sports betting needs and sports information. Find all the latest odds, the news, the sports developments, including this year's basketball playoffs, Major League Baseball scores, fights, and even next season's NFL futures. BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering information, from live betting to playoffs to esports, reality television, and a whole lot more. Head on over to the website today and use your mobile device. Learn about all the latest trends and all the action. BetOnline.net. Get those futures for next football season. Some favorable odds in terms of college football season. Some Heisman sleepers. BetOnline.net. It is where the game starts. Hey guys, thanks so much for making Locked On Vols your first listen each and every day. And an important favor to ask you, all right, we're putting together a survey so we can learn more about the listeners like you and make your favorite Locked On podcast, which of course, if you're listening to this one, I like to think it's Locked On Vols, even better. You guys know me. I'm always looking for help, right? This is your opportunity to tell us what you like and what you don't like about the Locked On podcast. So, you know, and your criticisms, be nice. Go to Locked On. I don't care. I'm used to it. It's all good. Go to LockedOnPodcast.com/survey. That's LockedOnPodcast.com/survey right now to get started. It won't take very long, and everyone that completes the survey can qualify for a chance to win one of 10 $100 Ticketmaster gift cards. Again, there's 10 that we're giving away if you complete the survey, and they're $100 Ticketmaster gift cards, all right? So to take our audience survey, go to LockedOnPodcast.com/survey. Thank you so much for your help, and let them know how much you love Locked On Vols. All right, how much money would you pay to go and watch your team win a championship? And I think that there's some different layers to this conversation. First of all, here I am. I am a cheap guy. You guys know that. I hope you know I have a good work ethic. I like to believe that I do. I work a couple of different jobs. You got to in this industry to stay alive, right? Until you hit that big break, I guess. I don't like to waste my money. I work really, really hard for my money, and I'm sure you guys are like that. I mean, who likes to waste money? Nobody likes to waste money, right? I love my Atlanta Braves. Love them. I contemplated going to game 5 and 6, game 4 and 5. Can't remember whichever ones were in Atlanta there towards the end. I know they wrapped it up in game 6 in Houston. So whatever it was, maybe it was 3 and 4. I don't know. I contemplated going to Atlanta for a World Series game. Now, I do have some connections. You know, one of my best friends, going to be the best man at my wedding. He is an Atlanta Braves employee. So I do have some, I did have a connection to get cheaper discounted tickets to the World Series. My uncle lives in Atlanta. My family lives in Atlanta, and he's got a really, really nice job down there, and he has a way of getting some things at a discounted rate as well. But I decided to not go because still, even at a discounted rate, it was just too expensive. I love my Braves. I would have loved to have been there just to say I went to a World Series game. Maybe one day in the future, I'll change my mind, and I'll decide to put down some money and go, but I didn't. I watched it from home, and that was fine by me for right now. There's difference. I mean, if there's game 7 of the NBA Finals or if it's 7-game series, you know, would you be willing to pay a whole lot of money to go to one of those 7 games potentially? Or would you be willing to pay a whole lot more money to go to a college football national championship or to a Final Four national championship? There's different layers to this. I really, really do believe this. But I'm bringing all this up because right now, ticket prices are just outrageous, all right? Secondary market ticket prices are out of this world, and Tennessee Volunteers beginning regional play. This stems on down to Knoxville, Tennessee as well. Right now, for Tennessee's opening game of the Knoxville Regional, that's at Friday at 6 o'clock, okay, Tennessee's price for that game admission against Alabama State on StubHub is starting at $220, and that's down the right field, kind of the bleachers down there near right field, okay? $220 as of Wednesday morning is the cheapest ticket you can find right now on StubHub for game 1 of Tennessee versus Alabama State in the Knoxville Regional, okay? If you want to get a regional pass, an all-region pass for the Knoxville Regional beginning on Friday, and of course that has the likes of Alabama State, Tennessee, Georgia Tech, and Campbell, the Fighting Camels, StubHub has them listed at $2,000 plus for an all-region pass to the Knoxville Regional. Again, this team deserves all people to pack the house. This team is making history. This team could very well win a national championship. But keep in mind, this is the regionals. You got to win that. Then you got to host a super regionals. You got to win that. Then you got to go to Omaha. Then you got to win that. Then you're national champions. I mean, this team deserves it. They're making history. But, you know, and there's contributing factors too. Lindsey Nelson Stadium does not have a large capacity. You know, I get all that. But would you pay $220 to go see Tennessee play Alabama State for one game? Would you pay $2,000 plus to get an all-region pass to go to whatever games you want to, potentially seven games over the weekend? StubHub right now, secondary market, has tickets for the NBA Finals Game 6 at Madison Square Garden for $900. Or at the Garden for $900. $900 for Game 6 of the NBA Finals. The series might not get that long, but still. How much are you willing to pay to go and watch your favorite team either hoist up that trophy or pick up a game in the series to eventually hoist that trophy? It's different for everybody you ask, right? I mean, it was very relevant for me with the Braves last year. I didn't end up going. $220, no chance I'm paying that, right? I've got a media pass. You know, I've covered a lot of Tennessee games this year. I'm not sure what my capacity will be this weekend. I probably won't be covering it, but I've covered a lot of Tennessee games this year. I don't pay to get in, but I'm media pass. I would never pay $220 to go watch a college baseball game. I just wouldn't. I would not pay $2,000 to, you know, go and, you know, watch every game in that region. That's just me. And if you do, that's okay. No chance in hell I'm paying nearly $1,000 to go and watch one game of the NBA Finals. Never. Nope. Not doing it. It's interesting who you ask, but ticket prices are just soaring right now. So, I don't know. If you're one of those guys that if you're a season ticket holder, you've already had the opportunity to buy tickets to the Knoxville Regional. I know that they're going to sell a short allotment out at the gate prior to the game on Friday and all the games. But the ones on the secondary market, you guys don't have to tell me how much you spent or whatever, but if you want to, how much would you be willing to spend? Is it worth it to you? If it is, that's fine. You know, Tyler Robbins, another guy that I work with at 99.1 The Sports Animal, you know, the Mets are on fire this year. If they can sustain it, if they can hold it, if they go to a World Series, he said he doesn't matter. He will pay whatever it takes to go watch them in the World Series because, you know, they haven't been in the World Series since 85. Prior to that, it was 69. Or they haven't won a World Series. They were in the World Series in 2015. He says it's worth it for him. No chance. I'm not paying $1,000 to go watch one game of a World Series or an NBA Finals. It's an interesting thing to discuss here because, again, Tennessee, you hope it takes care of business this weekend, of course. Then it'll be Knoxville Regional or the Super Regionals. You think those ticket prices will likely go up. And then, heck, if they make it all the way to Omaha, which they better and which they should, you know those tickets in Omaha are going to be through the roof. So, interesting thing to discuss here because it's very relevant. How much would you be willing to pay to go and watch your team compete or win a national championship? Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff for sure. Hey, coming up here to conclude a Thursday edition of Locked On Vols, we are going to check a new quarterback listing group. Where does Hendon Hooker rank going into the season of 2022? And Mel Kiper's first big board. Any Tennessee football players on that big board or top 10 at each position? We'll check it out here when Locked On Balls returns. Guys, I appreciate it for making Locked On Balls your first listen every single day. The second listen, check out the NBA Big Board podcast. Out the door, make that your second listen right behind Locked On Balls, which is your first listen here on a Thursday. All right, so Mel Kiper Jr. has released his first big board, his top 25 prospects for the 2023 NFL Draft. No surprise, a couple guys at the top. You got Will Anderson Jr., who I thought would be a top five pick if he entered this year's NFL Draft. Bryce Young's there at number two. CJ Stroud's at three. Jalen Carter, defensive tackle with George, is four. You got guys like Michael Meyer, the tight end of Notre Dame. He's at seven. Eli Ricks, cornerback of Alabama, is at nine or at eight. Kayshawn Boutte, wide receiver from LSU, is at nine. On fourth, and, you know, you can check it out for yourself. Jordan Addison, now at USC, formerly at Pittsburgh, is at 18. You know, kind of stuff like that. Mel Kiper also breaks down, Will Levis is number 22, good grief. Mel Kiper Jr. also breaks down the top 10 players at each position, you know, right now in this way too early kind of power rankings type deal for the 2023 NFL Draft. At the quarterback spot, you got Young from Alabama, Stroud, Van Dyke from Miami, Richardson from Florida at four, Levis at five from Kentucky. You know, that's your top five. Hendon Hooker comes into number 10. How does Hendon Hooker stack up against Anthony Richardson and, you know, guys like Will Levis in terms of being a pro prospect, in terms of being the, you know, Anthony Richardson, He's like a mini Cam Newton, honestly. If he can put it together, you know, he hasn't been consistent on the field just yet, but if he can put it together in terms of measurables and all that, he has all that that what the NFL scouts and, you know, front office personnel just salivate over, right? And that's why he's high on this list. Will Levis, the same thing, right? I mean, he's like 6'4", 240, right? And he's got a good arm. That's why they're high on this list. Hendon Hooker's not really like that. He's about 6'2", about 215. A little skinny guy, scrawny guy. He's athletic, but he's got a good arm, but he doesn't measure up in stature to those guys. So that's why I think Hendon Hooker, again, is down this list. But how good of a year does Hendon Hooker need to have to maybe jump up this list, be a top five quarterback entering the 2023 NFL draft, be a top six quarterback entering the 2023 NFL draft? At least he's on the list. He is the only Tennessee player to be listed in terms of the top 10 at each position per Mel Kiper. Again, this is way, way, way too early, 2023 NFL draft power rankings. Again, there's no running backs listed from Tennessee, and there wouldn't be. No wide receivers. Cedric Tillman's not listed in terms of the top 10 wide receivers. And, you know, and when you think about measurables and all that, he's got good size. He's got good girth, right? But, you know, he runs about a 4.640. That's not blazing speed, and it's fast enough. Juwan Jennings runs a 4.7, ran a 4.74 at his pro day. It's fast enough, but it's not that fast. How good of a season does Cedric Tillman need to have to become a top 10 wide receiver entering the 2023 NFL draft? So, you know, that'll be interesting. I mean, hell, even Jordan Addison here at USC, formerly at Pittsburgh, he's at number 3 on this list. So, you know, tight ends, you wouldn't think Princeton fan Jacob Warren would be on this list regardless. Offensive tackles here too. This is interesting. So, CBS Sports, they put out those way too early mock drafts, and we talked about a couple weeks ago in the pod, and they had Darnell Wright mocked as a first-round pick. I think it was 23 overall to the Indianapolis Colts in that exercise, right? But Mel Kiper doesn't even have Darnell Wright in his top 10 in terms of offensive tackles. I think he should be. He's got the measurables. He's got everything you want in an offensive tackle. He's proved that he can play both left and right. Now, he struggled his first 2 years at the Power 5 level playing right tackle. Surprisingly, he switched to left tackle and played very well, and he's probably going back to right tackle this year because that's still more of a home feeling for him. We'll have to see exactly, you know, how he pans out, but how good of a season does Darnell Wright need to have to be considered one of the premier offensive tackles entering the 2023 NFL draft? I think he's got work to do, don't get me wrong. He's got some work to do, but I think he's the closest one that can get there. There's no guards. Jerome Carvin wouldn't be in this conversation. Cooper Mays is draft eligible, but he wouldn't be in this conversation. Defensive ends, here's interesting. What about Tyler Barron and Byron Young? Byron Young, he's already put on, what, 40 pounds and 7 foot on Tennessee. He's solid. Athletic build, he's quick. He can stand up in a two-point stance, can drop back and cover the flats, cover the hook curl. Heck, he had an interception against I think it was Purdue in the Music City Bowl. I can't remember one of those games, but he had a pick. You know, how good of a year does Byron Young need to have? And I think he, you know, like Darnell Wright, can jump into the conversation, maybe top 15 in his position, and jump into a draftable position because he has soared since coming to Tennessee. What about Tyler Barron in a more traditional defensive end role? Playing that more five technique where Jaquan Blakely was last year. If you can stay on the field, if you can, you know, stop getting hit by the injury bug, that's something that Tyler Barron could do as well. So, you know, those are the ones that really jump out to me. Tennessee doesn't have a defensive tackle that'll be in this conversation next year. Jeremy Banks, he almost played himself into a draftable position last year, but not quite. He needs to stop with the antics after the whistle and all that, but no doubt about it, he was a very good linebacker for Tennessee last year, and I still think he can get so much better. Can he take that next step, and can he get drafted as an inside linebacker in 2023? I think he can. But this list right now, Noah Sewell of Oregon, no surprise, Jack Campbell of Iowa, all Henry Tuol of Alabama is at number 3 of the inside linebackers. Where have we heard that name before? Owen Papo of Auburn, former Tennessee commit, who obviously flipped. Those are some of the notables there at inside linebacker. But I think Jeremy Banks could jump in this conversation. Very interesting. Cornerbacks, Tennessee's got a ton of them, but can any of them play? Safeties, Tennessee has two veteran safeties, but they won't be in this conversation. And then kickers and punters, I don't think Tennessee's in that conversation as well. So I found that very interesting. Interesting that of the 2023 draft-eligible players, you know, these way, way, way too early conversations of power rankings and top 10 rankings at each position, that Hendon Hooker was the only Vol on this list, and he came in at number 10 in the quarterback position rankings. Again, Tennessee needs a quarterback to be successful, and Tennessee has one. Last thing, this is an article from David Hale of ESPN. He ranked all 131 college football quarterbacks in situational tiers, meaning his top tier, Heisman or bust, tier one, C.J. Stroud, Caleb Williams, Bryce Young. Makes sense. Tier two, Heisman waiting room, means they're right on the cusp. NC State's Devin Leary, Cam Rising of Utah, and Tyler Van Dyke of Miami. Okay, makes sense. Tier 2A, what's a guy got to do to get some Heisman love around here? Stetson Bennett of Georgia. He can go to the end of the list because he will not have an NFL career. Tier 3, pretty good. Eight players in this conversation, and this is where Hendon Hooker ranks. You got Virginia's Brennan Armstrong, Louisville's Malik Cunningham, Wake Forest's Sam Hartman, Tennessee's Hendon Hooker, Coastal Carolina's Grayson McCall, Purdue's Aiden O'Connell, we've seen him, Mississippi State's Will Rogers, and Arkansas's KJ Jefferson. Hendon Hooker is in the tier three if you're ranking all 131 FBS quarterbacks entering the new year. Hendon Hooker is in tier three, characterized as Matt Hale says, pretty good. Tennessee's Hendon Hooker. Look at some guys below Hendon Hooker. Tier four, definitely, probably, maybe they're good. You have DTR of UCLA, who I think's awful. Spencer Rattler, who you got to prove it to me. Will Levis, who you continue, I mean, you're not even getting enough love on this one compared to all the other ones you're getting. And Oklahoma's Dylan Gabriel. I agree with that one right there. Tier five, so hot right now, meaning they're being talked about like crazy. Quinn Ewers of Texas, literally throw a pass in college football before you appear on another list, please. Anthony Richardson of Florida, can he find consistency? Jackson Dart, what can he do in the SEC? And Cameron Ward of Washington State. And then finally, I mean, he's got 25 tiers. I'm not going to go through them all here, but just stay healthy. Good quarterbacks that can't stay healthy. Keaton Slovis of Pittsburgh. JT Daniels of West Virginia. Those make sense. Those make a whole lot of sense. So Hendon Hooker in tier three, per this ranking from Matt Hale. Pretty good. Tennessee's Hendon Hooker. Do you agree with that? I do. David Hale. So, found that interesting as well. All right, that's going to do it here for a Thursday edition of Locked On Vols. We'll come back on Friday, get you set for the Knoxville Regional. We'll, of course, give you some more updates from the SEC Spring Meetings in Destin and a whole lot more, guys. Appreciate you, as always, for making Locked On Vols your first listen. Rate, review, subscribe. Throw me 5 stars. Can't thank you enough. Interact in those comment sections on YouTube. You guys are awesome. We will do it again tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the rest of your Thursday, everybody.